We're going to start then with the paper from Julian with the title of Between the Present and the Future? The Uncertain Reformist Legacy of French Socialism.
Thank you, Colin. And I'm very honoured. I know I'm an organiser, but I'm actually very honoured to be speaking at my own conference. Several reasons. Several reasons for why I feel that I should say that. First that I'm obviously, some of you know, I'm now co-editor of French History with my colleague Penny Roberts, succeeding Malcolm, and it's partly with that titre that that I'm participating. Secondly, it's an opportunity for me to share with you some quite new research that is still in its fairly early days on independent socialism, and as the Benjamin of the panel and of all the panels, I feel very much that I want to emphasise that I'm opening up some questions that I'm only just getting into, and which Christophe, for example, has spent much longer than me meditating on over the last few years. And final note of anxiety and trepidation, just as before I leap in, is that I've used the opportunity today to frame my thinking about reformist and independent socialism in France with the help of two German thinkers who I'm even less well qualified to talk about and barely scratching the surface in terms of my reading of them, as some of you'll probably realise. Of all the legacies of the French Revolution, one of the most enduring is the habit of mind which associates revolutionary rupture with the past as a key feature of modern political culture. Here's my first German thinker, following Reinhard Koselleck, modern French political culture can be seen as deeply attracted to the idea of a future-oriented sense of social and political time, in which the revolutionary casts off the moral complacency of yesterday and today. The sense that this is the natural understanding of time in modern politics has underpinned much political thought and action in the last 250 years. Koselleck has argued that modern revolutionary change is different to that of pre-modern society. Change in the modern time introduces a much larger horizon of expectation. And this broader horizon, in turn, leads modern society to try to focus on abstract futures that, by their very unknowability, remove the relevance of past experience from developing social identity in the present. In his collection of essays from the late 1970s, Futures Past, Koselleck advanced Heidegger's understanding of how the future plays the predominant role in individual identity by widening that idea of the future and individual identity into a study of social identity. But Koselleck and others have also asked, does the acceleration of time in modern society not create disturbing patterns of social dislocation? Revolutionary movements in France have often placed a value judgment on this idea of time, change as a good in itself, the leaving behind of the old as a necessary and important step. But ironically, revolutionary political culture has often also been accused of closing down opportunities for practical change. A message is preached that keeps the focus of the militant firmly on the future. But with the revolutionary reluctance to reflect on social patterns in the past or the present, there's little chance of finding a concrete path to that future. A colleague of Koselleck, Hermann Luber, has recently pointed out that from the growing sense of revolutionary change as a duty, politics can become, quote, potentially capable of terror to a hitherto unknown extent, and then in due course, ultra-conservative or dogmatic. Koselleck is a theorist who's focused really on the 18th and early 19th centuries, and so he's only of limited help for my own work, which is on the end of the 19th century. But what happened in that time where, to borrow a phrase of François Furet, the revolution supposedly, if you believe him, came into port around about the lead up to 1900. Around 1900, the revolutionary idea of time began to be called into question, not just in the right way you'd expect it to be, but also within socialism. And the problem that I want to investigate in this paper is that of how the moral force of revolutionary, future-inspired rhetoric came to be challenged within socialism itself by where a new focus on society in the present became more and more important. Socialists began to believe, in some circles, that adjourning the revolutionary hope sine die was self-defeating. Social change needed to happen in the immediate present. It's well known, for example, that Georges Sorel, Developing Bergson's idea of intuition, used the idea of myth to articulate the personal self-realization of the individual in a time frame that could be conceived, in a time frame close to the present. And he did so partly as a conscious attempt to shift the focus of socialism away from the future-obsessed mindset of turn-of-the-century French Marxists. Of more concern to me in my own work, however, is a group of socialists who, with the label reformist, articulated their belief in actually achieving practical change on the ground in the present. And this label reformist is controversial and difficult. A socialist politician like Alexandre Millerand openly subscribed to the label and was happy to use the label to define where he positioned himself, but not all others that, within this nebula of independent socialism would have been so keen with the label reformist. Nonetheless, those who have most often been called reformists had a sense of how political or social action should unfold within the present. Indeed, a deep-rooted argument between two accounts of political and social time played itself out within French socialism, between the present-minded reformists and future-minded ideologies such as that of Jules Guesde, the Guedism, or then later on communism. This argument, as I say, is a deep-rooted argument, and I think the best way to get a handle on what I'm trying to lay out here is that it perhaps operated at a level of unstated or half-understood arguments, where sometimes certain theorists would articulate suddenly very dazzlingly clearly their idea of time, whereas others at other points might not want to dip into this more philosophical rumination. And the debate then plays out beneath more overt struggles within socialism over, for example, participation in government. And the reason for wanting to go into a deeper, more complex and more difficult to pin down debate is that I think that understanding French socialism has for too long revolved around an overt debate such as, should we get into government? How should we exercise power? And I think you have to look for slightly deeper questions. And that's why I'm tentatively using time as a way to do that today. One important aspect of the clash between these competing temporalities can be seen in a subtle struggle over the use of history, especially the French Revolution. Following Kozelek, again, the French Revolution drew a line under the habit of learning lessons from the past. The distance between yesterday and tomorrow had become so great after the French Revolution that it ceased to be feasible to draw clear moral and political guidance from history. With this sense of strangeness, however, the past acquired a new academic discipline, the emerging scientific study of history in the 19th century. And it might be interesting to reflect on whether, after all, the Marxist historians of the mid-20th century actually saw the revolution as belonging to a past that was lost, the better to analyse it with the scientific rigour of modern professional history. But the present-minded French socialism of the reformists of 1900 also had its historians. Importantly, Jaurès, Georges Renard or Benoît Malon wrote about the revolutions of the previous 100 years or 125 years with a sense of the familiar that they thought was lacking in the discourse of French Marxism in their day. I'll come back to this point about history at the end of the paper. Why has the present-minded socialism of the reformists had such difficulty keeping its place within the left? Simply put, the act of rejecting the present has kept its moral force throughout the last 200 years. After the First World War, it was essential to develop a moral vision which could relegate the reformism of Albert Thomas or Marcel Samba to the past of a world war and an unhappy compromise with bourgeois politics. Until the Popular Front, the SFIO clearly relied on the temporal vision of pre-war Guedism, in which the day of socialist achievement would be constantly adjourned. After the liberation, the intellectual elements that would lead both to the rejection of the old SFIO, compromised in Algeria, and ultimately the Communist Party itself were put in place. The historians of the post-war era disliked the pragmatic, limited vision of the present-minded socialists of an earlier generation, and Christophe's new essay on La gauche est-elle morale has this description which is so lovely that I'm going to read it to you, about the fate of the reformist in modern French left-wing culture. Ainsi, le réformiste associé au salaud entama-t-il ici une longue carrière dans une nation comme la France, toujours prompte à une révolution incantatoire. Le réformiste est l'homme des fades compromis, de la sage raison qui étouffe les énergies, de la paix civile et du dialogue émollient. Les réformistes seront toujours les premiers pendus aux lanternes allumées du grand soir. It's very nice, that. I really enjoy that little... Okay. Sums it up much neater than I could. It's too easy to see the present-minded socialism of Alexandre Millerand, Albert Thomas, or others as bereft of idealism, I would suggest. Certainly there was a taste for the prosaic in Millerand's love of ministerial work. On entering the Ministry of Commerce in 1899, he wrote to his friend Georges Renard, « Je puis donc travailler avec la certitude que quelle que doive être la durée de mon passage ici, je laisserai quelque chose, si peu que soit. Cette assurance me donne une sérénité au-dessus de toutes les attaques et de toutes les petites perfidies. » Actual accomplishments, however modest, were his aim, and with his serene confidence in his reformism, Millerand couldn't understand why the moral force of the culture of revolutionary rupture persisted in the 20th century. But this sense of a personal socialist ethic derived from action in the present became a frequently articulated refrain in reformism, in a whole range of different areas, in the speeches of Aristide Briand, in the studies of academics on the fringe of the university world, such as the historian Georges Renard or Edgar Millot, and in the engagement of many socialists in municipal political activity, for example. After the founding of a unified party in 1905, dissidents within French socialism constantly criticised the party hierarchy for its overbearing use of revolutionary rhetoric. And reformist or independent socialists frequently claimed that they had a much richer understanding of the traditions of French socialism than their orthodox opponents. Renard, for example, writing about the revolutionaries of 1848, sought to build a real redemptive connection between the idealism of 48 and the practical progress being made in the early 20th century. And he did so with a clear sense that his Marxist opponents had relegated 1848 to being a story of defeat that would be forever locked in the past. Other critics of populist French Marxism would insist that the rhetoric of Jules Guesde and his allies would anaesthetise the workers, making them ready converts for nationalism. The militant and sociologist Eugène Fournier wrote in 1907, Revenons à notre œuvre, à notre devoir, qui est de faire la démocratie politique et économique. Sinon, and this is fascinatingly prescient, sinon attendons le gendarme et souhaitons du moins qu'il ne vienne pas du dehors. The emphasis is on faire. Socialism had to get to work in the present. Fournier, a quirky and sometimes long-winded theorist of associations, nonetheless articulated with real precision the present-minded temporality of his sort of socialism. In 1913, he reflected ruefully on how much further advanced working-class organisation was in Britain than in France. Nous avons chevauché les rayons de l'étoile et nous avons marché dans un éblouissement. Au lieu de lui demander modestement d'éclairer notre marche sur le terrain accidenté des faits. The more modest light that Fournier longed for was a present-minded concentration on social facts, on the sociology, as he had put it, of today's France, in which the real promise of emancipation could be found. Thus, conflict over the time frame of social redemption would become a fundamental dividing point within the French socialist movement. But what deeper significance is there in the work of those socialists who believed in everyday revolution, in which the possibilities of the present were more important than waiting for a cataclysm in the future? What I'm describing as present-minded socialism in France developed during and after the period which Pierre Rosanvallon has described as a quiet revolution in the 1880s and 1890s, in which a social change of huge significance, the emergence of social groups outside the state, developed gradually without necessarily being fully understood by Republican politicians. So the turn of the century, 20th century, was a vital moment in which many socialists who genuinely believed in the legacy of the French Revolution found themselves rejecting the classic revolutionary ethic and its social temporality based on rupture with the present. This sort of present-minded socialism can, in fact, I think, be associated with a tradition that goes back to Proudhon's critique of Marx. The urgency of Proudhon's search for a moral change in society, one that would genuinely provide justice, equity and liberty, inspired the many frustrated alternatives to Marxist orthodoxy that have come and gone throughout the 20th century. And then, as Jaurès insisted, socialism needed to really discover its philosophy of hope and idealism. It would do so if it focused anew on the present rather than the future. In his commentary on the Communist Manifesto, Jaurès carefully explained that the mainstream revolutionary tradition needed to shift its gaze if it did indeed want to avoid collapsing into a philosophy of misery. So, German thinker number two with great trepidation. In order to develop my understanding of what a present-minded focus in socialism might mean, and I'm really only beginning with this, but I'm finding some worthwhile insights in the work of Walter Benjamin. I'm fairly new to Benjamin's work, but his famous theses on the philosophy of history, sometimes labelled on the concept of history, contain some very suggestive ideas for this discussion. In this fascinating text, written in 1940, Benjamin redefined the term Jetztzeit, now time, weaving into it a concept of messianic time. Understanding Benjamin's idea of messianic Jetztzeit might, I think, enable a fuller investigation of this present-mindedness in French socialism. In this essay, Benjamin wove together a new reading of Jewish and early Christian theology with a very particular understanding of Marx. Strange combination of readings, but one which allowed him to develop a critique of what he called the vulgar Marxism of modern social democracy, which he claimed had devalued Marx and set up a shallow belief in progress, which had done nothing to prepare Europe for the rise of fascism. Benjamin suggested that living in the now time entailed an almost explosive ability to rise out of the trammels of a chronological time frame and draw on the past in order to give depth and definition to present experience. He argued that socialism had too often neglected the suffering of past generations as it turned the gaze of the worker to an unknown future. Benjamin's theses finish with a recollection from the old rabbinic tradition, the prohibition of prophecy. Those that live in the present are not permitted to find the answers to what will happen in the future. But living in the present does not mean living in a stale, stagnant time with no hope. The Jewish philosopher Gershom Scholem, fascinated by ancient Jewish philosophy, but also by St. Paul, who Scholem believed was a classic example of a Jewish revolutionary, written to Benjamin as early as 1918, I understand, encouraging Benjamin to think about the definition of messianic time, reminding him of the way in which the grammatical tenses in Hebrew are based less on an idea of past and future and more on completion and incompletion. Scholem suggested that messianic time was neither the complete nor the incomplete, neither the past nor the future, but a place where the past, the complete, rediscovers actuality and becomes unfulfilled, and the present, the incomplete, acquires a kind of fulfilment. So, in messianic time, the devout do not sit on their heels waiting for the end point of history, the arrival of the Messiah for the ancient Jews or his second coming for Christians. Benjamin recalled, this is the very end of the thesis on the philosophy of history that I'm going to quote, the Torah and the prayers instructed the ancient Jews in remembrance, which stripped the future of its magic to which all those succumb who turn to the soothsayers for enlightenment. This does not imply, however, that for the Jews the future turned into homogeneous empty time, for every second of time was the straight gate through which Messiah might enter. So Benjamin's definition of Jetztzeit was that it implied a pregnant, anticipating time, the time that remains, as the philosopher Giorgio Agamben has put it, in which the end point of history is already grasped, but as a facet of present experience, not as end point in itself. Where Heidegger, for example, had described the flatness and monotony of living from day to day, contrasting this with the way individuals' identity took flesh from future expectations, Benjamin, turning that around, saw an abstract faith in the future as sterile and empty. The political context of Benjamin's reflections, I think, is very helpful, because he associated the crisis of mid-20th century Europe with contemporary socialism's obsession with a shallow idea of social and political progress. Against this, Benjamin attempted to outline what he described as a revitalised historical materialism, one which would reintroduce the possibility of a history that could be redemptive, history that could understand suffering and pain, not as an academic lesson, but as an inspiration to present political action. Messianic time is the time it takes to consider the process of redemption, the time in which the healing of past suffering is understood. We might say that Benjamin was attempting a reversal of the future-minded political culture that Kozelek describes, found in the 19th century. A politics that had refocused its attention on the messianic now time would become vital because it would allow time to stop in the present, and radical political action would take on a more explosive power as a result. Now, while clearly we're talking here about something quite different from the prosaic pragmatism of Alexandre Millerand, this sense of the messianic possibilities of the present should give us a fresh impetus for studying the intellectual roots of reformism in France, and perhaps for understanding more about how it has struggled to overturn its opponent, the future-focused mentality of the revolutionary movement. In the classic view of the divide within French socialism, The timing of when and how to take or exercise power is often seen as the key question. But beneath this divide lay a more fundamental discussion about how the present and the future would be relevant to the socialist movement. Should the inexorable march of progress bring about revolution, and should socialists thus remove their gaze from the present and fasten it on the eschatological endpoints of history? Or should the implications of the socialist revolution be embraced within the Jetztzeit? The influence of early 20th century sociology can be seen playing its part here, as the present-mindedness of socialists like Fourniere was wedded to a complex vision of society in the present, one that was too complex to resume within the simple lines of the theory of class struggle. Well, what sort of revolutionary legacy, then, has come down from these different ideas of time within the French left? And indeed from the two visions of history that flow from these two ideas of time within the French left. The paradox of the struggle between present-minded and future-minded socialism is this, I think. Those who, well, the people I'm studying, and who I think you could perhaps talk about as being post-revolutionary, in their attempt to move on from the culture of temporal rupture that they would associate with revolutionary political culture, These post-revolutionaries, these present-minded socialists, in fact, identified most deeply with the struggles of the 18th and 19th centuries. That's the paradox. The very act of placing revolution in a historical context, in an era that was now closed, could give the present-minded socialists deeper inspiration. By declaring their belief in a revolution that was over, about to pass the baton over to Christophe, as you can see, they were actually liberated to reconnect with it more dynamically. They found by distancing themselves from the culture of revolutionary rupture that the French Revolution did, after all, have a legacy, one which could be recuperated in their activity from day to day. Thank you.